repeat. You know, those words paint a picture of a consistent life, don't they? Predictable, planned, measured. Nothing's going to go wrong. No arguments, no running late, nothing impossible to complete. No broken relationships, nothing. No issues whatsoever. How does that sound to you? Boring? Yeah, impossible, yeah. Maybe some of us are thinking, oh, that would be amazing. That my life wouldn't be the whole muddle of competing stresses that pull me in different directions all the time. It would just be amazing. I would know what's coming. It would all be calm and settled and lovely. And probably others of us are thinking, no, please, Lord, not that. Get me out of here if that's what's in store for me. It would be so dull, so boring, so depressing. I want my life to be unpredictable, all over the place, vibrant and exciting. Maybe we're somewhere in between those two things. Perhaps that's more realistic. Sometimes we want that unpredictability, that vibrancy, that variety. Other times we really need patterns to live by, rhythm and a sense of order in life. For Moses, who we're going to be looking at this morning, life started off under pretty difficult circumstances, as we hear in a minute. Started off hard, got worse, and then just when Moses thought that everything had settled into a new, unchangeable pattern, that he'd sorted himself out, life was interrupted, and life would never be the same again. Just listen as I read from Exodus chapter 3, or follow in your own Bibles, or flick along on your screen, whatever you're going to be doing. But listen carefully what's going on here. Look out for signs of hope. That's the purpose of looking at this, signs of hope. And we want to look here on what's happening in this particular significant moment as God moves his people on with him, as things change, as things move into a different phase of their journey together. So this is the first 10 verses of Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock unto the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'll go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from in the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So this typical day for Moses was eat, sleep, work, repeat, and keep going like that endlessly. He would have seen small fires starting up in the desert on his journeys. It was a massively dry, massively hot landscape, a little thing burning and then fizzling out. That wouldn't have been unusual. But here, this was not an ordinary day. Until now, what each day came along was eat, sleep, work, repeat. This time, it's eat, sleep, work. Whoa, what's going on over there? Why is that bush not burning up? It got Moses' attention. And so began this massive shift in his life. It wasn't so predictable anymore. It wasn't what he expected to be happening. This was different. through the word of the Lord in these extraordinary circumstances. Moses saw and heard and experienced things that he hadn't before. He heard that oppression would be transformed into hope-filled life again. He needed to make sure that he didn't overlook hope and that he really understood the fullness of the hope that the Lord was offering to him. That's for us as well. We need to make sure that whatever's going on in our lives, we never overlook the hope that is ours through Christ alone. We need to understand the fullness of the hope that God has given out to us. So Moses, not overlooking hope. He was born into oppression. That was how his life started. In Exodus 1 verse 8, it tells us that a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt. Now that was seriously bad news, because if you didn't know about the Lord's servant Joseph, then you didn't know about the Lord himself, and you weren't going to be living your life in godly ways whatsoever. You're going to be probably the complete opposite. You had free rein to do as you pleased. You had no idea on what it was that the Lord was setting out as the best for his people. And this new king didn't like the fact that God's people, the Israelites, were rapidly increasing in number. So he moved them into slavery and ordered the midwives to kill all the newborn baby boys so that this next generation of children being born would be the last one of God's people. And then he would be free of them at last. Moses was born soon after that had happened at a pretty dangerous time to be born as a boy. But his mother somehow managed to hide him. I've never really got to grips in my head with how that works. You can hide a newborn baby and nobody hears it. Don't know how that works, but it happened. She hid him for as long as she could and then hid him at the banks of the River Nile. Something extraordinary happened to Moses that day. And his life would never be the same again. Pharaoh, this oppressive king of Egypt, the one who's set up this oppressive way of living for God's people, it was his own daughter who found Moses and took him to the royal palace and was given permission by her father to raise him as her own. Being raised then as an adopted son of Pharaoh the king and his daughter, it gave Moses instant access to different things. A whole transition of life happened in that moment. It gave him access to luxury and wealth. As a prince in Egypt, he was respected. He was given special honor. He was living in a privileged place amongst the social elite of the time. But you know, it didn't stop there. Moses had everything at his fingertips. Life was easy. Luxury and comfort was all around him. He had slaves to serve him the finest of food and bring him the best clothes. His opportunity for material gain in life would have probably been unprecedented at the time. But Exodus 2, verse 11, tells us that one day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. You can read in Exodus 7 that Moses was about 40 at this time, probably, but however old he was doesn't actually matter. What we need to notice here is Moses is standing before, looking on at scenes of oppression and injustice being hit out against his own people. As he stood and he looked and he saw and he tried to take in what was going on and understand it, something extraordinary happened to Moses that day. And his life would never be the same again. Just before we come to that, I have a question, first of all. How did Moses know that the people in front of him were his own people? The ones living in oppression that he'd been adopted away from, they were actually his own people. How did he know? He'd been raised as an Egyptian, but these people in front of him were Israelites. How did he know that his true identity was one of them? His true identity was a man of God. Well, it could have been something about his appearance that made it obvious. Or perhaps Pharaoh's daughter who had raised him had told him one day. But, you know, we actually don't know, and it really doesn't matter. You see, when we see God standing on the side of the oppressed, through the actions of his people, the how and the why, the finer details of all of that, are really not important compared to the fact that God is moving to defend the poor and the oppressed, to give them signs of hope that he hasn't forgotten about them. That's the bit what we need to hold on to. God was saying to his people, I haven't forgotten about you. There is hope. Your situation can change. If we spend all of our time looking for answers to life's unanswerable questions, we're going to end up no further on in our understanding, are we? If all that's going to happen is that we'll completely overlook the hope that God is holding out to us, that he really wants to us to understand and see and embrace, then we're going in the wrong direction. If that's what's going on for us, then we've missed an opportunity. We've missed something important. Moses stood that day on the side of the poor and the afflicted, and he took action. He did something. Okay, he could have made better choices than smacking one of the guys in front of him and killing him. He got in huge trouble. He fled for his own life. And his life now really would never be the same again. But it wasn't over. It might have felt like that at the time, but it wasn't over. The story carries on, but I just want us to pause here for a moment for ourselves. We need to connect ourselves here with what's going on, because this isn't just some fascinating ancient story that we read in the Old Testament, but this is the word of the Lord. And you know, it helps us not to overlook the hope that's there for us in our own lives. We need to engage with it. We need to connect with it properly. When Moses fled for his life after killing one of Pharaoh's own people, his life could have been over. And it's the same for us, you know, isn't it? When we hit a point of disaster in our lives, or a point of crisis, a turning point that we just have no idea what on earth is going on, why it's happening, where did that come from, what do I do now? Now, I've probably told you before, my best friend Martin was killed in a car crash 5 months after he had been best man at our wedding. And you know, that was a tough time. My journey of faith with the Lord pretty much stopped at that moment, because all I focused on for quite a while was my anger and my searching after the pretty impossible, inevitable question to the impossible question to answer, but inevitable to ask. Why? Lord, what have you done? Why? I got through it, though. Yeah, my cancer diagnosis in February 2014, well, that wasn't helpful either, was it? Filled me with all kinds of fears and anxieties. But listen, don't focus on my issues. I'm just using those as an example to move us on here. Don't focus on my issues. Think about your own lives. What have you been through that's dimmed the light of hope that was once there for you? What are you in the midst of right now? What's going on for you today? What's coming up that you know you've got to go through, but it's not looking like it's going to fill you with life in all its fullness that we hear promised by being disciples of Jesus? You know, our own honest and vulnerable answers are all going to be different around the room, but the same truth is there for all of us. You know, what was true in the light when things were good, when things were all going well, what was true in the light is still true in the darkness. This is not the end. Wherever we're up to, whatever's going on right now, no matter how much it might feel like that this is an ending point, God hasn't forgotten about us. God hasn't given up on us. He never will. If your response at the moment needs to be, yeah, right, because that's your honest response, that's how you feel, well, that's acceptable for now. If that's what you really need to say, that's okay for now. But please, don't stop there. Don't give up there. Don't stop listening, because we're not finished yet. We need to make sure that we don't overlook hope, because that's the only way, when we see hope, it's the only way we're ever going to understand the fullness of hope in the way that God wants us to get a hold of it. We need to understand the fullness of hope in every aspect of our lives. You know, we don't have time today to look at every little bit of detail of Moses' story, but encourage you to read through it in Exodus particularly. But we need to wind the story forward a bit. I'm going to move rapidly through this journey away from disaster that Moses took. He caused for himself, by the way. And all that happened for him as he rebuilt his life, and because I want us to be standing in the desert with him now as we come to chapter 3, the bit that I read. Here we are with Moses standing on the mountain of God as it's described. So life has shifted massively. He's no longer surrounded by easiness and privilege that he would have known in the royal palace. That's gone. But as a shepherd, he's surrounded by the hard place of the desert with all its dangers, from the heat, from exhaustion, from the threat of wild animals. That's now the reality for Moses' life. The easiness, the comfort, that's gone. Life is different. This scene is about a life that's been virtually stripped bare of anything that had covered it before with security and comfort. And now we're standing alongside a man here who is fully exposed to the way of life that he wasn't prepared for. Hear that? He wasn't prepared for this. Each day, each season, each year is measured out in precisely the same way, day after day, until the day of his death. Nothing in his circumstances suggests any other future for Moses. Eat, sleep, work, repeat. But then one day we get to this point where this extraordinary thing happened to Moses to turn his life around. God spoke to Moses from within a burning bush. You know, he could have easily ignored it, couldn't he? Said before, it would have probably been a familiar sight, a little fire going on and burning out and fizzling out. He could have perhaps reached for his water bottle, thinking that what he was seeing, it was just something messing with his head. He was dehydrated or something, and so he needed another drink. But this was no ordinary place. This was no ordinary moment in Moses' life. He notices something quite different was going on just then. Yes, there was a bush on fire, nothing new there. But this time was completely different. Moses could see the flames surrounding the bush, but it wasn't being destroyed. I like the image that Mike put up. I said to Mike when we were planning for this morning, can you think of a way in which I can have a bush here and set fire to it without causing a problem? And we couldn't come up with that plan, so we'll settle for Mike's picture. You know, surely when we're seeing this unexpected, weird thing going on, surely any of us would have gone closer to check things out, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we have been a little bit intrigued? Wouldn't we have gone and had a look? Yeah, some of you at least would have gone and had a look. I would certainly would have gone and had a look. We wouldn't have overlooked this new thing. We wouldn't have ignored it. This new experience that turned out to be a new opportunity. We would have at least inquired about it, wouldn't we? It's a shame that we can't actually live like that more often. We're helped to see signs of hope or places of hope or ways of renewal. But somehow often we manage to settle for a different decision, a different way through, don't we? Maybe that's because even though we're not thriving where we are, at least it's familiar to us. And so we're going to cling on to it. We're not going to change anything because this is what we know. Even if it's rubbish, we're going to hold on to it. You know, I've been there so many times in my life. And if you want to talk to me about that one-to-one, I'd be happy to do that. But this is no ordinary place, and this is no ordinary moment. And when Moses came closer, it was then that God had got his attention most fully, and God could speak to him, could speak into his life in new ways, in ways that he hadn't done before. And first of all, Moses heard that the place where he was standing was holy ground. You know, there's nothing actually particularly significant about that patch of ground that Moses was standing on in that moment. It was no different to any other patch of the desert that he had touched his feet on earlier on in the day. Except for one thing. This was the Lord's moment, and this was the Lord's place for Moses to understand, to get to grips with the fullness of hope, and actually then to do something important, to embrace it for himself. Not just to hear about it and move on and go, oh, that's lovely, but to actually do something. It must have been so easy and so exciting as Moses was listening to the bit that we have in verses 7 to 9 and daydreaming about what was going on. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them, and I'm going to come and do something about it. That's the word of the Lord. Moses must have been so excited listening to that. I wonder actually whether he was really paying attention or had his mind gone off already right as soon as God started speaking. Moses, I've seen what's going on, and I'm here. I'm going to do something about it. You know, this is hope written large, isn't it? Oppression will end. Life will be renewed in all its fullness. The years lived out through injustice and torment, they're going to be transformed into a time of dancing and blessing, because the Lord is about to provide a way for this new thing to happen. Do you know, get a hold of this before we get to verse 10. Okay? Get a hold of this. This is the promise of God to act, to move in power in our lives, in the lives of people around us. You know, we can turn to other places in the Bible and see similar kinds of things going on. We can look in Acts 9 at the life of the murderous oppressor of Christians, Saul, and then see the fullness of hope that he discovered through his own encounter with Jesus, another image we saw on the screen. His life was transformed, completely turned away from all that it meant to be Saul and the enormity of all that it would be for him to be Paul, in the name of the Lord, the Lord's apostle. We could turn to John chapter 8 and read the words of Jesus as he explained that God the Father had sent him, God the Son, to show and explain the fullness of hope that's there for all people who reach out to him and embrace him. We could turn to the book of Revelation and wade through that weird imagery that one day I hope to understand better than I do right now, so that we can see hope expressed through the removal of division and oppression and replaced with what right now in the world might seem impossible. But one day, through Jesus and no other, all will be made new. We could look at those things, but I want us to stand here with Moses for a moment, because this is where we need to connect. This is where we need to bring ourselves back to. You see, what was true in the light is still true in the darkness. All this great stuff that's going to happen in Exodus 3, 7 to 9, it is amazing. It's the work of the Lord. We need to embrace it. But listen, verse 10 is coming. And this is what it says in Exodus 3, verse 10. So God has promised to do all of these things. And he says to Moses, so now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. You see what's going on here? The promise of the Lord has been given. Great things will be happening. And now God says to Moses, through you, on your way, I need you to do this for me. How would we have reacted? Moses has just heard the Lord saying to him that he, the Lord, hasn't forgotten about the plight of his people, the oppression, the suffering, and the mess that their lives are in, and he's going to come and sort it all out. Do you know, if I had been Moses, I think I would have been daydreaming as that was happening. I wouldn't have been paying attention. I know what I'm like. If something exciting is being said, I'm already buzzing around imagining, what is this going to look like? You know, when will this happen? How long do I have to wait? All of those things going on. And then Moses hears in verse 10, so now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh. Whoa, 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 back up a minute. Lord, didn't you just say that you have come and you are going to sort it all out? Yes, Moses, go. I'm sending you. Don't overlook hope. Understand the fullness of hope. You know, this way of God sending his people to transform lives in his name is the same for us as it was for Moses. When we let ourselves see that hope is really possible and we begin to understand the fullness of it, it won't be long before we realize that we have to be actively involved. In the rest of Exodus 3 and into Exodus 4, Moses came out with all kinds of excuses why he couldn't possibly be involved. These are verses in a passage that I repeatedly went back to when people were first trying to encourage me to go into ministry. And I was like Moses, just like Moses. 15 years ago this week, I was ordained. So obviously God kept nagging at me in the right way. Well, I hope you think that anyway. Exodus 3 and 4, here's Moses, all kinds of excuses why he couldn't possibly be involved. Out of his own fears and his own insecurities, he told God again and again and again why he wasn't the right person. He's not got the right words. Nobody's going to pay attention to him. Look at all this mess I've caused before. Why are they going to listen to me now? God knew differently, didn't he? He held on to Moses. He knew that Moses was the right one to be actively involved in transforming the lives of God's people and those around them. Let me ask you this same question again that I asked before. What have you been through that's dimmed the light of hope that was once there for you? What are you in the midst of right now? What's coming up that doesn't look like it's going to give you life in all its fullness? I said a number of times, something extraordinary happened to Moses that day, and his life would never be the same again. Don't think that's just for Moses. Don't ever think that. The same is true for us. But you know, unless we bring ourselves to the place where we are standing on holy ground, fully in the presence of the Lord, and so there we're ready to engage and be involved, you know, it's never going to happen. Instead, we'll be stuck in that eat, sleep, work, repeat kind of place, overlooking hope and not doing anything to understand the fullness of hope for ourselves. Because all we can do is look and see it happen in other people and not in us.